We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
On the Wolfpack Sports Network from Learfield IMG College, welcome to the Nevada Women's Basketball Podcast. Here's your host, Josh Sushon.
Welcome back to Running with the Pack, a podcast about the Nevada women's basketball team. It's been a while since we've had one. It had been a while since the Pack were able to play basketball. We're now up to episode 9. At the time of this recording, Nevada has just completed a 2-game sweep of Utah State. That came after a 17-day break due to a COVID shutdown. And now Nevada getting ready for 2 games at Air Force and then the Mountain West Conference Tournament. We bring in head coach Amanda Levins. How are you, Amanda?
I'm doing great, Josh. How are you?
I'm excellent. I'm glad that we can once again connect and that we have lots of topics that we can discuss since we're back to playing basketball. And I wanted to start by doing something that I've been trying really hard not to do on this podcast, and that is ask you the same question for the podcast as I ask you before a game or after a game. But I know that people don't hear everything. And I asked you before one of the games about why there was no senior night, and I just really liked your answer. So especially for people who did not hear it, please explain again why we did not do a senior night.
Well, with the NCAA allowing everyone to kind of not count this year in their eligibility clock, you know, Nia and P both have the opportunity to return and play another year of basketball next year. So I'm really hopeful that they both will come back and play for us for another year. And it's been such an unusual year. We were paused and there was a lot of uncertainty with that. And when were we going to play again? And finally the Utah State games are here and, you know, we want to plan it and do it right. And also, you know, you want them to have, you know, one amazing senior night. So we did some little stuff for them because obviously academically P's a senior, Nia's, you know, getting her graduate degree. But we want to do something really special for them because they have meant a lot to our program. They've been tremendous teammates and leaders. And, you know, I'm hopeful next year around this time, we'll do something and really celebrate those two.
Well, when we had Nia Alexander on the podcast previously, she said she was coming back. And I actually told her the other day, once it's on the podcast, it's written in stone. You cannot change your mind.
It's official. That's right.
You're right. It's official. Well, you mentioned little stuff. You mind sharing some of the little stuff that you were able to do for the seniors?
Well,
the seniors?
Their teammates, they decorated their locker and they got them these really cool things. They look like scribe things that roll out that you can write on that say like, congratulations, graduate. And all the players wrote like a personalized note. You know, I gave them each a card, and I love like handwritten cards, things like that. I think they're really meaningful and people take time to do that and, you know, got them their favorite kind of candy. And when I went in to give them those things, I think their teammates got them quite a bit of their favorite kinds of their cheap foods. I would say I looked in their lockers. I was like, my goodness, it's going to take them weeks to eat all of this junk food. So, you know, I try to just remind them, eat it in moderation, but you know, their teammates definitely did some nice things for them. And then, you know, the coaching staff did some stuff as well. And then both of their families came to watch them play in person, which was awesome. You know, I know that's really special because they're not close by. You know, Nia's parents are coming from Seattle. P's family's coming from the Midwest, the Kansas area. So it's not a super easy trip, especially in winter.
Oh yeah. That's great. Oh my goodness, that's really awesome. I was actually going to ask you about what they could do, because normally, you know, the families are on the court and there's flowers and there's a framed jersey and all that. So I'm really glad they were able to be there in person for their daughter.
For sure. And for us, that was another reason we wanted to wait. You know, usually we have the families on the court. We have a big celebration after where we gather together. And this year with the COVID rules, like no one's allowed on the court. We wouldn't be able to do anything together after the game. So I'm glad we're going to be able, you know, to have the opportunity to really do it right for them next year.
From your playing days, what do you remember about your senior night?
You know, my parents were there and everybody else, I feel like, was so much more emotional maybe than I was. You know, and when people do stuff before the game, I think sometimes that can be a good thing. Sometimes it can be a distraction. And so as a coach, we've always tried to do everything after the game so that people can focus on the game. And then we can just really honor them as an individual when the game is over. But my mom, she's always been an amazing supporter of me and, you know, maybe more emotional. And so when she's super proud and things like that, she tends to get emotional. I actually took her to a public speaking engagement I had last year. And, you know, I kind of mentioned her and of course she got a little bit teary eyed. And I always would kind of think like, you know, what is behind that? And now that I'm a mother and I don't know if it's an age thing or you kind of just see things differently when you have children, I don't know, but I find myself getting more like that. So as much as I kind of gave her a hard time, here I am, you know, things that maybe didn't move me 5 years ago. Now I'm like finding myself getting teary eyed. So it's just interesting, the process of life, I tell you.
Yeah. You know, I find it interesting too, the decision on whether to do the senior night before and after. I've seen times when there's a very emotional pregame senior night and it takes a while before the players get locked in. And I've seen it go the other way. Yes. I've seen it after games when the team loses and it's kind of awkward because they're upset, especially if it's a last second loss. And it's like this really weird transition to go from competing and you lost and now you're celebrating. But then I've also seen it when it's the ideal circumstance. You win the game, everyone's already on an emotional high, and now you can celebrate the seniors and it becomes even more emotional and meaningful. So it can really go both ways. And I've seen it work positively and negatively, depending on which time you do it.
Absolutely. And I think every coach has a different philosophy on that night. Like, do you start all your seniors? And maybe you have a senior that hasn't played a big role all year. And maybe it's a game that's really meaningful to how your team finishes the season. And so, you know, I think there's a lot of decisions that come along with how you want to handle that type of game. But, you know, you can't ever control the outcome like of it being senior night. So if you do lose and everyone's down and then, okay, let's turn around and celebrate this individual. There's a lot of highs and lows that can come with a game like that.
All right. So there's still work to be done. There's two games at Air Force. There's still the conference tournament. And so I don't want to make it seem like we're looking far ahead because there is work to be done. But that said, since we are talking about senior night and we're talking about how nobody loses a year of eligibility this year, not just the seniors, but every class. And I'm curious how this is going to impact everyone around the country in every sport with just the backlog. You know, you're used to players departing. They run out of eligibility. Now here comes the next wave of freshmen. And so at least for you and your staff, as you're recruiting and as you're looking at scholarships, what's your feeling about this backlog that we're going to get for the next 1, 2, 3 years?
Yeah, I think it really impacts the 22 class and then it will impact the 23s as well. But, you know, there's a lot of great players in that class. And from a recruiting standpoint, we're looking at players that we know could help us and we'd love to have in our system. And we're just like, we're not going to have any scholarships. We're going to maybe have, you know, one or two scholarships in 22. And so, you know, for us, we're typically pretty slow to offer players because we want to make sure that if they accept, you know, it's going to be a great fit both ways and we don't over offer scholarships we don't have. And I think you saw last year with the transfer portal, I think there was like 1,100 players or something like that in the transfer portal. So there's a lot of movement. And I think, like, as coaches, we need to recruit with the anticipation of possibly having players leave, especially if the NCAA passes the legislation about the one-time transfer exception, because I think players will have a little more incentive to know I don't have to sit out and I can go somewhere and be eligible right away one time. I think that number could even go up. You know, now with the year of eligibility, though, there's also maybe less spots available because people don't have so much movement. So I think there's going to be a lot of moving parts. I do think it will impact the next couple high school classes because there's just not going to be as many available spots if everyone takes advantage of having this extra year of eligibility.
Yeah, you know, over the weekend I was with baseball and I was talking to TJ Bruce to get his perspective on the whole thing too. And also, Major League Baseball is dramatically cutting back on the draft. Normally it's 40 rounds. Last year it was 5. So normally for baseball, you would have all these juniors that get drafted plus the seniors, but now everyone is maintaining their eligibility. And so TJ was saying that he thinks the quality of college baseball is never going to be better. And the quality of junior college baseball is never going to be better because there's just not going to be that space. And so I'm not expecting you to answer about baseball, but from basketball standpoint, just your thoughts about how this is going to impact the quality of basketball at various levels over the next few years.
Well, you're going to have older players, you know, and I think that experience and the development in the weight room over like a 5-year span. Yeah, I agree. I think the quality will go up. The competition level will go up. And I think the parity will increase too, as teams are able to retain and develop people longer. And you kind of saw that on the men's basketball side in the last, probably, I guess, 10 years or so, when some of the top schools that were normally you'd see in the Final Four, they were starting to get players that were one and done. And then they're playing against teams that have 5th-year seniors, like a VCU, you know, Wichita State had older players, but you saw these mid-majors going to the Final Four because they were able to have older players. And I think on the women's side, you know, everybody will have older players, not going to be a one and done thing, but I think the level of play across the board will continue to just get better, which it has been doing anyway. And I think it's a really exciting time for women's basketball, especially as we continue to get more TV exposure. You know, if they put us on TV, people watch, and that has statistically been proven. You know, the more media exposure we get, the more the game is going to grow, the more the fan base can have access to us. And, you know, you just saw it with women's soccer too. You put the games on and people watch and they care. You know, I think people get or women's basketball or women's sports sometimes gets a bad rap, like that people don't care if it's on. And that's not true. When it's been on and people have a chance to watch it, people are fans of it. So it's exciting. Hopefully we can continue to get that TV exposure, and the quality of the game is going to be great. And it'll just, you know, lead to more growth for our game.
Certainly last summer was, from a recruiting standpoint, last summer was almost non-existent. When you start to look ahead, how much, let me make this kind of a two-part question. How much do you normally do high school recruiting versus summer AAU type recruiting in the past versus what you anticipate this summer is going to look like?
Yeah. So we typically try to use as many days as we can and try to plan ahead from a budget standpoint, so we're not taking a flight last minute. And where we are, we can really get to Northern California, you know, on a drive, which is nice. So you could go that day and get back that night. Last year was just a ton of virtual recruiting, online tournaments. And from my standpoint, I like that because I could go back and watch games that if I was at a tournament, I probably would have missed if I had to choose which game to watch, because we have 3 games at the same time. Now with the online stuff, I can go back and watch every single game and not miss anything if I choose to. You can also rewind and see things a second time. And you can rewatch a game if you want to, if you're, you know, a coach reaches out and says, hey, can you take a look at this player or whatever? So that's really nice. I think in the future, we're going to see the virtual recruiting continue along with in-person stuff. The virtual stuff saves you time and money. And you can be on campus with your team and recruit as well. I don't think there's a replacement for being in the gym though, and seeing somebody live, you know, to really get a great feel for, you know, their body language, how they interact with teammates, because you can't always see that on film. The camera angle doesn't catch it. So this spring, we're in a dead period now. They just extended it. So typically our big recruiting times, we have a weekend in April, a weekend in May, and then we have a bunch of days in July. So maybe by July, we'll get back to some in person, but, you know, depending how the pandemic plays out, it might still be virtual as well.
All right, I want to switch gears a little bit, and I want to, because later on in this podcast, we're going to visit with Dominique Phillips. She goes by Dom, and I want to talk to you about her and her background and her injury and coming back from that. But before we do that, I want to ask you just whether it's Dom coming back from an injury last year or now Allie, who's going through a knee injury, or just in the past, what are some of the things that you do to try to keep the player involved and still have them work on elements of their game when they're coming back from a serious injury?
We just try to be creative so they can continue to build skill while they're not able to be completely cleared for practice. So we utilize like sitting in a chair, doing a lot of stuff. If they can stand, you know, anything that they could do completely healthy, we try to improvise and do it with what they're allowed to do, if that makes sense. And we've done a lot with Dom with like her baby hook stuff, her shot, ball handling. And, you know, she was good at all of those things before, but it's like, how do we keep trying to improve her with what we have? The second she was allowed to swim and do things like that, we really tried to get her conditioning up so that she could be as close to game fitness as possible when the time when the time came for her. And I've been really impressed with like her fitness coming back. Like she doesn't look out of shape, you know, and I'm sure if you asked her, she probably says she feels a little bit out of shape, but I think she's got a great motor for how long she's been sitting out. And to me, if you watch her play last year to now, she doesn't look like she had an injury. And I think that's an amazing testament to her, you know, our medical staff and just the recovery, and her surgeon, obviously, too, doing a great job. But like, you know, her recovery. And I know it was slow going in the beginning. The pandemic hit. She went home and she didn't have access to like the normal rehab that she would have right away. And that kind of set her back to come back. But also it really, I think, allowed her to fully heal. I think sometimes players come back and they're not completely ready and they don't really trust their injury, you know, whether it's their ankle, their knee or whatever, they don't completely trust it yet. And I think the longer amount of time that Dom had to sit out was actually a positive. She came back when she was truly ready, when she trusted herself, because she goes out and she just, you know, you see her play and she plays with reckless abandon. And it's, you can't play that way if you don't completely trust yourself. So I think, you know, the way that she's been able to come back is pretty remarkable.
How much of it is also on the player, where, and again, whether it's Dom or Allie or whether it's players that you've had in the past of kind of becoming a quasi assistant coach and watching film or, and just kind of being a part of the program in a different way?
Well, the way that they get to watch the game, and that's another thing, we try to have them like chart different things. So they're seeing the game from a different way, like watching the weak side of the floor, watching, you know, the post defense or watching rebounding spots or things like that. So then they get to really understand like why all those things matter so much and why we preach to them. And so Allie, you know, going in wants to be a coach. So like, she's already trying to see the game in that way. And for Dom, like she's probably could coach if she wanted to, after all the stuff she's had to watch and chart the last year. But I think it makes them really appreciate all the things that we're talking about, and they understand why they're important. And now they're even better leaders for their teammates. And I mean, Dom, the way that she goes out and has executed like scouting report defense, that thing for her has been a huge jump from her freshman year. She's not having the breakdowns of things that we've gone over in a pregame because she knows how much they matter if people don't do them. And the things I hear her saying to her teammates, I'm like, yeah, that's awesome. You know, she's only a sophomore and she's saying all the right things. And Allie's going to be, I think, even more vocal when she comes back, because she already saw things in like such a high basketball IQ way, but finding her voice and being able to be a little bit more of a vocal leader when she comes back, I think she's going to be really motivated to do that, because she's watching P and she's watching Amaya and watching people that really do that for us now, and seeing how it impacts other people from a distance. And I think she understands like the value of that. And I'm excited for her to get back and bring that to our team.
I think you've learned by now that I love the background on recruiting stories for different players. In the bio for Dom, she mentions the long relationship that she had with you. Just how far back did you start recruiting her? How far back does this relationship go?
She used to come to our elite camp, I think, in eighth grade when I was at Arizona State. And so her dad would bring her, and she has a niece that would come around as well. And I knew her mom, you know, from camps as well. So I've known her since like eighth grade. And she's just such a great kid, like so positive, coachable, would always hang out after camp to say thank you and talk to all the coaches and her dad. And I love that she was always just grateful, and she was engaged in making a relationship with our coaching staff. And so when I got the job here, obviously we definitely continued like to recruit her hard. I thought she'd be a great fit for how we want to play. She'd be a great fit in the Mountain West. And obviously she ended up being the Gatorade Player of the Year in the state of Arizona. So that type of accolade. And to like give you a little bit of reference, the Cavender twins are from Arizona in that class, you know, and they're having an amazing career at Fresno State. But that class was really good. And it's funny, she's, I swear, like her AAU program, they have a lot of players in the Mountain West. And I gave her coach kind of a hard time. I was just like, man, you have like, I think her freshman year, three of the five players or four of the five players were like from her AAU program. You know, they're coming in making this big headway in the Mountain West Conference. So that's pretty cool. And she has a lot of familiarity of other people in the conference. But yeah, I've known her a long time, and her growth and seeing her blossom into a young woman has been really neat.
When we look ahead to the future for her, she strikes me as someone you can play here at the five. I don't know if she could be a true point guard, but it seems like she's someone who you can put inside, outside at a variety of different ways for whatever you might need in a given game.
Yeah. And I just think all of that's going to get better. You know, she can even improve like all of that stuff, her post-up game, her ball handling, her decision-making in transition. She had 10 rebounds last night. You know, that's incredible because she's a little bit undersized, but she's just finds a way to come up with the ball. She has a great feel for where the ball's coming off the rim. And last year, she didn't really get a true off season with us, you know, with the pandemic and then with her injury. So I'm just excited. I think the sky's the limit for her, to be completely honest.
All right. Last topic before we wrap up with head coach Amanda Levins, let's look ahead to Air Force. We tried to go there in December. It did not work out. We tried to go there a couple of weeks ago. It did not work out. We're going to try for a third time to get to Colorado Springs and play the Falcons. So I'm sure that you've looked at film at them multiple times already. what are your thoughts as we get ready to play the Falcons for two games, hopefully?
Well, our staff has joked that the third time is a charm. So we're going to get to Colorado Springs and get this series in. But they're so tough. You know, they have great seniors. They have great guard play. They're just resilient, hardworking, gritty team. They play great defense, and it's going to be tough. They're playing a lot better. I don't know if better is the right word, but I think they've had more practice time because they've been paused and kind of in and out of stuff. And I think now that they've got some time together, they're getting their rhythm, and they're playing well at the end of the season. So it'll be extremely tough there. They just beat New Mexico the other night. New Mexico was tied, you know, or at the top of our conference, and that's a great win. But that just shows you how good they can be. So we need to be ready. We know it's going to be hard. We need to be focused and ready to play to go down there and compete.
I don't know about you, but I've been there at least a half dozen times. And every time I arrive, I'm always just in awe when you go through security and then you go. And it's kind of a drive once you go through the first security before you get to Clune Arena, and just seeing the cadets when they're marching or training, and seeing the planes and just seeing the campus and knowing everything that they do, that those student athletes do, beyond just what normal student athletes do. What's just your appreciation for what the Air Force Academy cadets do?
Yeah. I mean, they do everything, like you said, that someone at the Academy would do. And then they're a student athlete. And to me, that's just incredible and speaks to like a amazing level of commitment, discipline, toughness, all of those things. And that's why they compete. You know, they may not reflect it in their record, but that team is in every game and they just compete and they work so hard. So when we do the media day, when each team gets to take over the channel for a day, I love seeing their stuff. You know, their players like jumping out of planes and then they like go to practice later in the day, or they have players in the flight simulator and then they like go to practice later in the day. I mean, to me, it's just really unreal to watch that. It's really cool. You know, from a, just, I guess, a fan standpoint, I'm just like, wow, that's incredible what they're doing, you know? And so they're going to leave the Academy and they're going to have these amazing roles in our leadership in our country. You know, that's pretty cool. And I'm like cheering for them as women. You know, they're going to be pilots. They're going to be, you know, generals and things like that, making decisions. And in these meetings that are like completely impactful with the way things happen in our country. Like, that's a really cool thing.
Yeah. When I was at New Mexico, my analyst for home games was Nikki Heckroth Lobato, and she played for the Lobos. And whenever I would ask her about playing Air Force, she always told me, she said, they set the hardest screens. She's like, you feel it the next day. Even if you beat them, you feel it the next day because they set the hardest screens in the league.
Yeah. And I'm sure that's just the way they're wired, right? Everything they do is like precise, you know, and it has to be. So that's well said by her. Like, if they're going to set a screen, they're going to like nail you with it.
All right, Amanda. Good stuff as always. Thank you so much. I will meet you in Colorado Springs after being with baseball for the next few games. But once again, congratulations on the sweep, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Josh. Safe travels.
Once again, that was head coach Amanda Levins. We'll take this brief timeout, then we'll come back and we'll visit with Dominique Phillips. This is episode 9 of Running with the Pack.
The constant energy, the tight turns and bustle of the city. Some survive it, others were made to conquer it. The first ever Lexus UX and UX F-Sport crossovers are crafted for those who were made for the city. UX, starting at 32,000. See Dolan Lexus.
MSRP excludes delivery, processing, and handling fee of $1,025, which may be subject to change at any time. Excludes taxes, title, license, and optional equipment. Dealer price will vary.
We continue with episode 9 of Running with the Pack, podcast about the Nevada women's basketball team. And this week's guest is sophomore forward Dominique Phillips. She goes by Dom. Last year, her freshman season was cut short due to a knee injury. She was still named on the Mountain West Conference All-Freshman team. She returned to action on February 5th at Boise State. And at the time of this recording, the most recent game, she's coming off 8 points, 10 rebounds in just 18 minutes. As the Pack completed a 2-game sweep of Utah State. Hi, Dom. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi. Thank you.
One of the things that's been really fun about this is getting to know the background about you and your teammates. And one of the things I find that's just so awesome is how many of your moms played basketball. Alishka's mom played professionally. Nia's mom played professionally. Your mom played at North Texas State. And I think it's just so fun to see how Title IX has impacted sports for women. So let's start with your family and your mom and what type of basketball player she was and how that influenced your love for the game.
My mom was more of a, gritty player when she played. It was more of a different game she used to talk about. She said it was more physical and, it was just scrappier basketball. So she always told me this, the stories that she had when she's getting hurt or she's hurting someone else. And it's just a tough player mentality. She kind of taught me. But my dad also helped me with my basketball. He actually loved basketball. He had me and my sister in the gym very young. He coached me and her. And then he's been my biggest supporter. My mom and my dad, both my biggest supporters. And they've been, just rooting me on, especially through this injury. That they've never gone through injuries in any sport they've done, so they didn't really know what to expect.
Were you able to – I know there wasn't as much video back when your mom played, but have you ever been able to find video or even just, like, pictures of her in her uniform or anything and be able to just kind of, like, visualize and see what she was like as a player?
Yes, I've seen quite a few photos of her in her jerseys and, with her team. And she lived in Texas, and she had, the blown-out hair and – she was very tall, slender, so she was more like a 3 guard. And, I could just tell that she was a hooper because, she was longer than the rest of the players. She kind of moved different. She always had a, kind of swag to her when she played basketball, especially when she has, like, old videos that she showed me before. So.
Uh-huh. Did you ever play one-on-one against your mom? And if so, was there ever a time that you beat her and you realized, okay, I'm really starting to become a player now that I can beat my mom?
When I was younger, we used to go shooting at the park next to our house. And I remember we were playing pig, and it was the very first time I beat her. And I don't think she really realized that I beat her. And she never really gave me the title of winning at that point. She kind of was like, no, we didn't finish the word. We didn't finish it. And so we ended it at that, and I never talked about it again.
Until this podcast. Hi, Sheila. Welcome to us. talking about this this game of pig at the school. Let's switch gears a little bit to, we just had Amanda on, and Amanda talked about how when she was an assistant coach at Arizona State, you went to some of the basketball camps and things like that. What are some of your earliest memories of going to basketball camps and when you first met Amanda?
My basketball camp experience was mostly at ASU, where Amanda was at first. And I just remember being there and just looking at, the way that the coaches were with their players. And it just kind of amazed me. And I followed up through then when she was, going through her career there. It was amazing to see, how players turned out every year. Every year they were different. I looked up to those players, and I definitely looked up to the coaches because they would constantly keep in contact with me. And our relationship just kind of grew. We talked for a very long time, I think, out of eighth grade, I called her the first time, and we talked for you know, an hour and a half, just talking about how my day was, how my family's doing, and that kind of stuff. Not even just about basketball. And that's how I knew it was like a real, you know, real connection to a coach that actually cares. And then when she transferred over to Nevada, she actually called me, and I was very surprised. It was after the September 1st and everything. And she was like, hey, so I went to Nevada and I'm now the head coach. I would love for you to come play for me. And so that was a big, you know, that took me back a little bit. I was like, hey, I was like, okay, yeah, that's actually like really cool. I really would love to come play for you anywhere she went. So I was ready to follow, you know, and I just knew that it was the right spot.
You just mentioned a little bit ago about, you know, how long you talked with her on the phone in eighth grade. I'm thinking back to what I was like at the eighth grade, and the idea of calling a college basketball coach in the eighth grade and talking to them about the future, there's no way I could have done that. What was that like for you, just picking up the phone and saying, hey, I'm going to talk to this coach and I'm going to start to build this relationship, even though you're still 4 years away from going to college?
Yeah, well, I was taught very early from a lot of club coaches and, you know, and just the hustle of trying to, you know, find colleges and stuff. And especially being in Arizona, it was kind of a little harder. You know, like California is like the epicenter of, you know, being right in the middle and all the coaches looking at you. So I kind of had to work for mine, and I didn't mind it. So just calling every coach I can, emailing them. Me and my dad used to spend some time on the weekend, and we would be emailing coaches. I have a tournament this time at this location. And, you know, it was just, it made me more mature at a young age, because I had to talk to coaches very professional and, you know, and kind of have my words together and know what to say. So it taught me a lot.
Yeah, I'm extremely impressed by that. And then once you did sign the scholarship to come to Nevada, knowing everything that you did, knowing everything that your parents did to help you and making those calls and making those emails, how did you feel like it was even more gratifying at that point that you were able to get this scholarship after all that work, both on the court, but also on your own contacting coaches?
Yes, definitely. You know, that was the end game here. And it was kind of like a sigh of relief, and also, you know, just an accomplishment, you know, for my family also, because, you know, we've been hustling with my parents taking me to tournaments, you know, every weekend, mostly out of state. Or we're, you know, driving an hour away from my house to go play on a team that is able to travel and play games somewhere. And, you know, and I really owe it to my family, because they're the ones that took me to these places and actually did it for me. But, you know, actually getting to a school to play basketball, have a free education, and, you know, and get what some of my family members don't have, it was a really big accomplishment for me and my family.
I was just reading this article about your time in high school, and it seems like you were really close with your high school teammates, and how you guys won the state title, and how you guys came close as a sophomore, and it was a really young team that that kind of all grew up together on varsity. What are some of your biggest memories about your teammates then, and what you guys were able to accomplish?
Well, some of the biggest memories I would say was just like our camaraderie. Like we were literally like sisters. A lot of times some of us knew each other since we were, you know, in third grade, picking up basketball, playing in, you know, the AAU tournaments and six games a weekend and, you know, that kind of stuff, playing on multiple teams. And we kind of just had the same, you know, idea of what we wanted to do in high school. And we went to a high school that was already known for being a good program. So it wasn't a surprise when we were, you know, trying to make it to the state championship. And that was always our goal. And it came out short my sophomore year, which kind of sucked, but my senior year, we kind of brought it all together, and it was just, you know, it was amazing, because when we won, we realized that all this hard work that we've done together, all the extra work we've ever put in, and, you know, just how close we were, you could see it on the floor. If you saw the game, you could just see it. Like, we were hugging each other, we were, you know, crying on each other, and that never happens. We were a very, you know, goofy team, and so it was definitely, you know, a very memorable time in my life that I won't ever forget.
Your senior year, you were named the Arizona Gatorade Player of the Year. Tell the audience who told you and how you found out about this award.
I actually had no idea. Amanda texted me and said, congratulations on winning Gatorade Player of the Year. And I said, I won Gatorade Player of the Year. And so I asked my coach, I'm in his class. He's a U.S. history teacher. And I walk up to him, I'm like, can you check if I won the Gatorade Player of the Year? And he says, yeah. And so we look it up online and it says my name. And I had no idea, no idea at all. I had no email, no nothing. I'm just like, okay. Coach Amanda's the one that told me, you know, it was just a very funny thing.
So you're in history class and you get a text message from your future coach while you're sitting in a chair with your current coach, finding out that you're the player of the year.
Yes, I am. Yeah.
That's awesome. I absolutely love it. So you get to Nevada. What would you say was the biggest transition going from high school to college, both on the basketball floor, but also academically? What were the biggest challenges?
The biggest challenges, I would say, were, you know, just coming into a program and you knowing that, you know, you earned your spot here and you're still going to have to work. And I knew that. And I think it was just the adjustment of style of play and how much structure there is within the game and outside of basketball. You know, the way we do things in practice, you know, when we do post positions and we do guard positions, and it was just a different way of like lingo that we taught, that we used. It was a different way of explaining things. And it kind of took me a second, took me back a few steps just because it was a very big change. And, you know, I didn't always play a post in high school. I didn't really have the fundamental post tendencies. I kind of just had, you know, just being a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger than everyone. So it was definitely a humbling experience to kind of like, I have to learn this and I have to be good at certain things in order to excel in the college level and slow down a little bit. And it's kind of just, you know, a game of finesse. It's just like, you have to figure out things that work for you and things that don't. And off the court, it was just school in general. You know, it was just being able to study for hours on end. And in high school, you don't have to study, really. I'm going to be honest. I didn't really study as much. So when I came to college, I actually learned how to study. And it was difficult the first semester, but second semester, you know, I was rolling right through it. So
on the basketball floor, you had moved into the starting lineup just before the injury. How did you feel? It was about a little bit past the halfway part of the season. How did you feel that you were adapting to Mountain West Conference play and just finding your footing on the floor?
Yeah. I felt like I found my groove, you know, like I finally started playing like, you know, the Dominique that was in high school that got recruited by Amanda. And I think she realized that too, like, you know, I was kind of getting into how I'm used to playing and, you know, how I've adjusted in the college level. And it was just, it was amazing feeling. It felt like, you know, I'm finally, you know, getting back into it and my teammates are happy for me. I'm happy for them. Like, it was just all going right so for so long, you know, and then the injury happened and it kind of just kind of hit me hard because I just started doing stuff in our conference. I just started it. That was the beginning. And I didn't really get to finish it out. And it was really frustrating and disappointing for me. And, you know, my teammates were really on me and my coaches were there for me. So I had a good support system during that.
Do you go back and watch the play in which you got hurt? Did you want to see it? And if so, how many times did you go back and watch it?
Well, it was during practice. So I think I watched it once, but I will never forget seeing myself do it, like the movement of it. I remember the feeling. I remember the sound. And I just remember what side of the court I was on, what move I did, everything. So I don't even need to watch it. I got it all up in my head. You know, I have it all saved. And it's kind of like I look back at it and it doesn't really bother me anymore because, you know, like it was just a regular move. It happens to some people and it can, you know, come out of the blue. It was just a random, it was a random accident that happened. No contact and can't really blame it on anything.
I remember before you got cleared to play in games and you had been cleared to practice, and I was at practice one day and mm-hmm. you fell down. And I remember everyone just kind of like looked around like, oh no, is Dom okay? And I think it was Coach Ashley who said, Dom falls a lot. Everyone just get used to it. And it was so perfect and funny and it just lightened the mood. And you got up and you had a smile on your face. So say, yeah, okay, Dom's going to be okay. It's okay if she falls down.
Yes. I'm a naturally clumsy person. And, I was a very clumsy person last year, and everyone, you know, kind of knew that. And so this year is kind of a new team, and I wasn't really clumsy during, you know, recovery, just, you know, to be safe and right. No re-injury. But once I started playing, I started going back to my old self and, you know, tripping over things. And they would say, you know, tripping over the lines and doing those kind of things. And everyone's just shocked. Like, they don't know what to do. They stand there and look at me. And I remember the first time I fell, I think it was what you're talking about. And I fell pretty awkwardly, but it was on my good leg. And I got right back up and I started laughing. And everyone's just staring at me. And I was like, what? And they're just like, are you okay? And I'm like, I'm okay. Trust me. I do this all the time.
The other part that I thought was significant, I think it was the first game against Utah State. And there was a play where the ball got thrown in the backcourt and you were chasing after it. And you ended up diving for it. And I think you got called mm-hmm. for a foul. And big picture, you probably didn't need to do that. But in my mind, I thought, well, that just goes to show that she has confidence in her knee, that she's just going to throw her body around to try and make a play for her team.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. That was like a perfect example of just showing myself that I'm able to do the things that I was able to do last year. You know, I needed to dive on the floor for that ball, even if it was a foul. You know, maybe Amanda might not agree with me, but even if it was a foul, you know, like I needed the confidence to, you know, tell myself that I can fall on this side of my body and hit my knee up a little bit, and I am still going to be fine. So when I do have to do that later in the season or, you know, in the tournament and I have to dive for a ball, maybe it's the last play, you know, I can do that for my team. So I want to make sure that I can.
When you checked into the game on February 5th, that was your first game back. When Amanda says, all right, Dom, you're going in. Tell us what you were feeling, what emotions you were feeling as you, you know, go past your teammates and get ready to check in.
Well, the feeling was, you know, I couldn't believe it, really, just because my recovery was just very all over the place, you know, with COVID and everything. And I was just like, okay, I'm about to play. I found out a day before we left that I'm going to play. And I remember I still had my mask on and I was throwing my shooting shirt off as I was running. And I got to the table and they were like, get your mask off. And so I forgot and I threw it off and I kind of just got in the game and my head was kind of everywhere. But I knew my job and I knew that, you know, I'm going to do the things right I can on defense first before I focus on my offensive game, just because I didn't want to go in, you know, shooting and, you know, doing all these other moves. I didn't think I didn't have the confidence at that time. You know, the second game came around, I had the confidence to do what I needed to do on the offensive end, but I really wanted to focus on my defense because I feel like, you know, that's something that I need to get better at in this recovery part of my recovery. And I feel like I did do that for my team, and my defense right now, I feel like is actually way better than it was last year. You know, I'm keeping people in front of me. Even with going towards my bad leg, I'm still keeping them in front of me. So I really wanted to focus on the defensive part.
On the website for your biography, in the personal section, it says that you want to be an athletic trainer after college. Do you think that your knee injury has made you more interested or less interested in being an athletic trainer after college?
Well, you know, I wouldn't say it's because of my knee, but I've actually changed majors.
Okay.
I'm actually in criminal justice now. So I really wanted to be a sports medicine trainer. Like my entire, you know, high school career, I was always helping out and stuff. And I just thought it was going to be a perfect fit. But in the long run, you know, I realized that, you know, I want to do something that makes more of an impact in communities. And I feel like with a criminal justice major, I can do that. So my injury didn't really have an effect on that. It was more of what I want to do in the long run and what I want to do to help and outreach, you know, my community around me.
Well, even if you're not going to be an athletic trainer after college, your teammate and roommate, Alyssa Jimenez, is going through the same injury now that you went through. Tell us what, some of your conversations or how you tried to just cheer her up and what type of advice you're able to give her.
So it's kind of funny because, you know, we have this kind of dynamic where I'm usually the goofy one and I can't really be serious in situations. So when she hurt herself, we kind of just laughed at it. Like we didn't really know what to do because she watched me go through it. She's done stuff for me. She's helped me, you know, she's giving me ice in the middle of the night. And I, you know, returned all those favors. And so, you know, it's honestly a crazy thing. You know, you can't control what happens in practice, can't control what happens in a game. And it's just one of those crazy things that happened. And I would have never thought, you know, that she would have ever gotten hurt just by the way she plays. She's a very, you know, very, she has very good body control. And it honestly hurt me when I heard that she, you know, tore her ACL once it happened. And, you know, I just knew that I had to be there for her and, you know, kind of tell her the ways of how it's going to go. But if I'm going to be honest, she's kind of handled it better than me right now, because she's actually doing PT twice as much as me, and she's doing more things. And so, you know, she's a strong player, and, you know, she's going to get through this just as good as I did, maybe even better. But, you know, she's definitely kept a positive attitude, and that's something that, you know, I wish I did early in my recovery, but she has a great attitude towards it.
I know there's still two more games left in the regular season against Air Force, and then the conference tournament is coming up. But when you look ahead, you still have 3 years of eligibility left, and, you know, no one's losing a year of eligibility for this year. What's just your enthusiasm about what the future holds for the Nevada women's basketball team?
You know, I'm just looking forward to just playing like a full season with this team and, you know, seeing where we can go, because this is our first year together. We have a lot of young players, a lot of players that never played, you know, in this kind of program. I feel like Amanda does a good job at, you know, differentiating what, you know, other schools do, you know, in different conferences. She's more of a, you know, strict, and we do certain things, and that make us a good person outside of basketball, and will make us a good, you know, a good adult when we grow up. And I feel like that's just different, even in basketball. She, you know, we have life lessons in basketball. So I just want to see, you know, how we grow and mature and into the basketball players that we can be, you know, by the end of it. And I have a good feeling that it will actually, you know, we'll be way better than we were this year, next year, just by, you know, having more of an off season.
Final question. Once everyone gets vaccinated, and hopefully by the time the next college basketball season starts, it can be normal and there can be fans, we're not wearing masks, and we're able to like interact with each other. What are some of the things that you've missed the most that you're looking forward to doing next season when we're hopefully back to a normal season?
Oh, wow. That's a hard question. You know, it's been a while with COVID. I think I would just say, honestly, just seeing everyone's faces, you know, like we'll be in the airport and we'll be doing, you know, traveling and stuff. And we have always masks on all the time. And we don't really actually, you know, talk that much because we're separated. But I would also, you know, like to just see, I don't know, like just hang out more. Like, I feel like when we first started our season, we didn't really hang out that much because all of us were either in quarantine or we were quarantining from coming home. And we didn't really have that like team bonding in the beginning, like most teams do. And I feel like we have that a little bit more now that we've been together for most of the season. But I feel like we, you know, once we are able to just hang out and, you know, and be a team, it's going to be good. You know, we can get to know each other more and more things than we don't know already, which is a lot.
All right. That's a good place to end it. Love it. Wonderful stuff, Dawn. Thank you so much for your time and your openness and talking about your injury and your family. This was good stuff. Thank you again.
Thank you so much.
That was Dominique Phillips. This is episode 9 of Running with the Pack.